Welcome to Affinia, a community of thousands of cybersecurity executives and vendors. In this show, we interview senior go-to-market leaders to find new actionable tactics, insightful tips, and best strategies. For more information, check out affinia.com. And now, welcome to the show.
Emily, thank you so much for joining us today. As we begin, can you say a few words about your current role? What kind of departments are rolling up to you? What's in your purview?
Yeah, sure. So I'm the head of marketing at BugCrowd. I've been here since December. So we're pretty excited. We've built a really powerful team over the last year. That team includes SDR, corporate marketing, product marketing, all of the marketing remits under our umbrella.
Interesting. So if SDR is reporting to you, because sometimes SDRs report to sales, I think there's a huge debate in the industry.
Yes, there sure is. Yeah. I've been in organizations that had both models, and I've seen it work both ways. Mm-hmm. My potentially biased opinion is that when the SDR organization reports into marketing, it creates that connective tissue between the marketing and sales organizations. Mm-hmm. It holds the sales team accountable, frankly, for providing feedback in the feedback loop and for executing on the different campaigns and getting pipeline generated. But it also holds the marketing organization accountable to quality, to making sure that we're not lobbing things over the fence that actually aren't generating for whatever reason that we care about the nuances, right, of what we're doing. So particularly in an instance like BugCrowd, where we've got both the marketing and sales organizations had new leadership this year, and we're redeveloping our models, it's a good idea, I think, to develop the marketing strategy with an SDR organization that can provide those regular inputs. Yeah. So that's been really productive for us here. And at my previous organization, we had the same model. It worked well there as well. So yeah, so I think it can make a lot of sense when you're building, especially.
For sure. It kind of makes sense because it avoids the conversation. Oh, you're not providing good leads. And from the sales perspective and from the marketing, we do, but it's just not working them properly. So it just avoids that conversation completely because it just the handoff further down the stream and the customer journey and further down to the bottom of the funnel, it kind of aligns better the incentives for both sales and marketing teams, kind of make them row in the same direction rather than sometimes it removes the friction kind of along the way.
Yeah. And one of the things that helps is having the head of, so we have a director of SDR and a director of demand gen, and the two of them are on the same team. So when we're strategizing for the marketing go-to-market plan, when we're strategizing for campaign execution, those two have mutually inclusive voices in that planning process and can kind of have that live negotiation as opposed to one of them hearing about the decision after the fact. And they both have that input. So that part works really well.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like us playing for the same team versus us versus them, which sometimes you get this dynamic as well. That's awesome. So this kind of paints the picture of a point in the career trajectory. I noticed on your LinkedIn profile, Veracode that you worked before?
And then it was Veracode, yep.
Before that, it was CA. And so it's kind of like technology to cybersecurity. How did this transition take place?
Yeah, so CA was actually a brief stint at Veracode. So I don't know how much you know about that process, but CA had acquired Veracode at one point as part of that integration process. And then we kind of kept it as a separate entity and were spun off after the fact as our own standalone. So that was a journey. But got some exposure to more of the startup culture in cybersecurity and the, you know, larger organization. So that was really interesting. But what sort of led me there in the first place is for a long time I started my career in SDR and AE type roles at an e-learning organization, so an enterprise e-learning company, Skillsoft. So I was there for quite a while in a couple of different capacities, all in SDR and AE roles and management roles. And one of the things we saw the most in that company is that there was just such an intense need, a widespread need for cybersecurity talent, for cybersecurity skills. And it was clearly a gap in the industry that there was a a big need for. And so when I had an opportunity to develop the SDR model for Veracode, mm-hmm. it clicked because I could see the pain points. I could really understand the need in the market, and it seemed like it was growing exponentially. And mm-hmm. so that was a natural evolution for me. So joined that company, built the SDR function over there in partnership with a few really solid leaders. We grew it internationally. And as you know, SDR requires a lot of enablement. So I ended up taking on some enablement, which necessitated, you know, interactions with operations and strategic planning. And mm-hmm. before I knew it, you know, marketing became the obvious path of growth for my particular role. So it was, I would say, somewhat of a unique evolution into cybersecurity marketing. I entered in through a different avenue in cybersecurity, but all roads lead to go to market eventually. And so it's been... Sure. And great.
For sure. It sounds like an amazing journey. You're right. It's to come from SDR and to marketing. It's, I think a lot of people kind of go from the agency, going in-house and things like this. But I think what it gives you a very unique perspective and understanding on both kind of the tasks and the challenges on the sales side and kind of mirroring that with the agenda on the marketing side. I think it puts you in kind of a very unique position because you know both worlds, and it's gives you that much more of an advantage versus someone who just went from agency onto the corporate side. And yeah. From that perspective, from that kind of experience, what would be your advice for maybe some of the junior professionals looking at cybersecurity marketing as a potential career or looking to make a switch from technology marketing to cybersecurity marketing, someone who's just kind of getting started? Time is everyone's most important resource.
Yeah.
What do you suggest? What do you recommend they spend? What are the two, three things they should spend time on to set them up for success in their career?
This show is brought to you by Aphenia, where we host one-on-one virtual executive briefings between cybersecurity subject matter experts like yourself and thousands of CISOs in our community. To host a briefing of your own, go to Aphenia.com and click sign up or click the link in the show notes. Now, back to the show.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, from what I was just saying, I would highly recommend, although it may not be the natural inclination of people that know they want to ultimately get into marketing, I would highly recommend spending some time investing in a portion of your career as a practitioner. Mm-hmm. I think it's benefited me greatly to have a unique perspective to other marketers in that I first and foremost am thinking about how is this going to be received by the people who need to operate with it? What is this going to mean for pipeline generation? How is this going to translate to the different priorities and objectives that these teams have at any given moment? Mm-hmm. You know, operationally and foundationally, what needs to be in place for this to work well? Because you can't just ideate it. It really does have to be solid execution. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more mathematical and formulaic in marketing than I was imagining when I first joined, but it took understanding the mechanics and how that actually manifests downstream mm-hmm. to really know where to place bets and, mm-hmm. and which ideas to chase and which, you know, to maybe shift from directionally. So mm-hmm. I would highly recommend spending some time either in sales, in operations, in we've had some folks in finance that had a lot of success as well because they really are deeply ingrained in the ROI mm-hmm. Or SDR. I think those are really valuable places to spend some time before you go into program management or some other form of marketing where, you know, you're going to have to be relying on other people ultimately to execute on your work to really get the value out of it. So having the perspective of what's going to happen when it gets into their hands, what you would do, where you would see value has mm-hmm. been huge. Not to mention, you know, there's that age-old tale of the tension between marketing and sales functions, right? And being a partner that your sales team knows, understands their world and making that they can trust is making decisions through that lens mm-hmm. has been hugely helpful for me in building a strong relationship with the sales organization, which is probably the most powerful thing you can have if mm-hmm. you want to be a really strong and a highly performing marketing machine, right? You have to have that trust from sales. You have to have that tight relationship, that feedback loop. That's a lot easier to do if they know you came from their world or have at least had some decent exposure to their side of the planet. So
absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. It's, if at all possible, kind of rotating through different parts of the organization and getting exposure to.
Yeah.
It just puts things in perspective that it's all parts of one big ship that's going to a certain target. It's not disjointed groups with different agendas that are often conflicting, and just understanding where everyone is coming from and just would make someone as a marketer that much more successful. It makes a lot of sense. You mentioned ROI. So I would imagine that's probably one of the measuring sticks that you use to analyze different campaigns and different channels. Mm-hmm. What's working for you now? It seems like every couple of years or so, there's a new theme that just captures everyone's attention. It was inbound for a while, and then there was live events and those virtual roundtables when during COVID. And then I think AI is just totally just taking everything as a wildfire. But it's always, it seems like it's, there's no kind of, no silver bullets in this business. And it's usually kind of a range of tools. What's effective for you right now?
This show is brought to you by Afinia, where we host one-on-one virtual executive briefings between cybersecurity subject matter experts like yourself and thousands of CISOs in our community. To host a briefing of your own, go to Afinia.com and click sign up, or click the link in the show notes. Now, back to the show.
Yeah, so that's a fair question. There's been a lot of evolution, as you said.
Yeah.
What is working for us really well right now as a strategy is, we call them integrated go-to-market campaigns. Mm-hmm. So what we do in addition to sort of our run rate and always on and digital campaigns is we do a quarterly, usually longer than a quarter. We just are wrapping our first and planning our second, but it's a campaign that includes all of those different tactics to some degree, right? But it doesn't end at digital down through SDR. Mm-hmm. It goes all the way through renewal. So we've got digital ads, retargeting, Sixth Sense, you know, ABM, digital ABM going on, saying a message that's then reiterated through our email nurture program, which is then reiterated through thematically through our webinar strategy, through regional events, through speaking engagements at events and the content that we're giving, through mm-hmm. the scripts to the SDR, the offers being made in the market that we equip the AEs with, the mm-hmm. incentives to the AE team, offers to our existing customers. So it's all the way downstream. So we're singing from the same songbook essentially for an entire quarter. And again, we've got those run rate campaigns and the always on campaigns and the awareness campaigns going on in the background that are a little bit more agile and tactical, but letting the entire organization, you know, be the wind underneath each other's wings for the same message, for a heavy hitting message that you need to get out to market, has been hugely beneficial for us. And we're seeing great results so far. I will say, translating to one of the challenges that you mentioned, when you get that level of complexity, mm-hmm. I think you run into your own challenges with reporting and the data. And mm-hmm. the more technology that you leverage to scale these type of tactics and campaigns, the more connective tissue there is between your different activity, the more critical reporting is. And that can get really complex. So one of the things we're navigating right now is the various ways in which we could be measuring and looking into the value of and the return on the different activities that we're doing. So we're mm-hmm. seeing really good early results on that from a pipeline perspective, which is our, you know, obvious ultimate target, but also frankly, internal optics and external optics, right? We're getting great share of voice from this. We're getting great thought leadership content, and we're getting great adoption from our internal team, which is sometimes the biggest uphill battle. So that's what's working for us really well. It's also one of the things that is becoming one of our biggest challenges. And I think sometimes those two things go hand in hand.
And the challenge in which way?
Mostly from the reporting aspect, right? As we do all of this and we kind of change the muscle memory internally, we want to make sure that we're giving visibility to our team into how all of the different activities are executing. But there's a lot of them, right? So making sure that you can consolidate the data in a way that's consumable by your internal stakeholders, and that you have the capacity, frankly, to be measuring regularly all the value of the different activities that you're doing, that you're reporting infrastructure can support that level of complexity. So there's been a lot of building going on, but the results have been really positive. So it's worth the effort.
Absolutely. It's interesting that you mentioned that you're seeing it through all the way to your renewal, which I think is very smart because so many people kind of stop short. Well, sales would sign up a client and now it's not their problem anymore, which becomes a problem if they churn. So the fact that you have the kind of long-term approach, I think it's a very kind of a logical step, which I'm not sure why not too many people take it. I think it's amazing. You mentioned measuring and kind of being data-driven, which is very interesting because I think back in the day, the old saying was, I know I'm wasting half of my marketing budget, I just don't know which half. I think it was kind of the old saying.
Yeah.
Thanks to Google, it sounds like it's not a problem for a lot of people right now with Sixth Sense, the Bombora, G2 Crowd. There are so many tools to measure intent, which is interesting because I've seen some studies that show at any given point in time, only a fraction of your total addressable market would be showing intent. Some people say 5%, 10%. And when prospects that fit your ICP show intent, I mean, life is good. They take demos, they respond to emails, they engage on LinkedIn, they feel, they may not be kind of selecting vendors, but they're at least aware of the problem and they're actively researching a solution. And it's, life is easy. They're on your website, they don't only download mm-hmm. your white papers, you can kind of identify them, at least by an organization. The issue that sometimes companies find is that that's not enough, maybe for an early stage startup, but for a company with any sort of traction or a sophisticated go-to-market engine, they really need to go upstream. And the challenge that we sometimes find that is facing marketers is that if you go to a CFO and say, hey, if we invest in downstream, in bottom of the funnel campaigns, you put a dollar here, and then 2 weeks later, $2 coming on the back end. I mean, I'm exaggerating kind of to make mm-hmm. a point. But for something that's more top of the funnel, addressing the remainder of the total addressable market who are early in the customer journey, they're distracted with other problems other than the one that you're solving. They're not at RSA, they're not at Black Hat, they're not at Gartner, they're not searching for YouTube videos, getting themselves educated. They're just busy with other things. So, and more importantly, because they're so early in the customer journey, investing in campaigns to educate, evangelize, engage them doesn't provide immediate feedback, immediate ROI. It's kind of, it takes months, sometimes years, sales cycles are getting longer. How do you think about kind of reconciling those issues? And on top of that, kind of to add, to add to it, I'm not sure if you, there's this talk about the dark funnels that often would you see people do a Google search for the company name and you say, well, it's good. We need to invest more in Google ads if people are searching. But what's not visible is that before that, that CISO or that cybersecurity executive, they had a conversation with a friend over coffee. Mm-hmm. They're in a private Slack channel where practitioners are sharing feedback about vendors. They went to a conference, listened to a presentation at the booth, but the badge didn't get scanned. There were all those things that happen kind of upstream, but are not measured, not tracked. So not only they're not, probably it's hard to influence a conversation that happens in a private Slack channel, but also you can't even see it, you can't even track it or attribute. How do you think about reconciling those kind of fishing for the small fish where you can see it rather than trying to figure out how to find the big fish that's maybe in the muddy water and maybe it'll take time to figure it out? How do you think about that?
Yeah, it's hard.
Right? Loaded question. Loaded. I admit, loaded question.
No, I get it. It's another age-old tale. How do you prove the value of awareness marketing? Here's ultimately how we do it, and it's not a science, but it's worked. yes, ultimately, what makes it downstream is a sort of long tail indicator of how well you're doing upstream. So that is a metric. First and foremost, we've had to strategically, this is the marketing team and the executive team as a whole, we've all had to get a touch comfortable with some unknown, right? Mm-hmm. So that happens when you can build trust with the broader organization through your execution by doing what you say you're going to do. Mm-hmm. But there are ways to pulse check it. And the ways in which we're doing that are through things like our community NPS score, our customer NPS score. Mm-hmm. We are doing things like combing social, and you know, we know we've done an exercise to figure out where our top personas' watering holes are and where are they communicating, and you know, are they in Stack Overflow, and what kind of commentary, if you search for bug crowd, is happening? Is it net positive? Is it net neutral? Mm-hmm. And so while it's not a scientific formula, and hopefully we'll get to a point where it is somewhat, we do a lot of sort of point in time pulse checks. And then we have those more NPS, how's everybody feeling about things, mm-hmm. type of surveys that help us make sure that we're directionally trending upwards in our engagement. But what we are doing as a company, and I think it's been really important for us, is we are placing some bets in the unknown. Mm-hmm. You know, we understand that many people, to your point, make it to our website or even our ads or even the point of Google searching. That's not top of funnel anymore. Top of funnel is chats over coffee or, you know, a hacker event, because again, that's one of our communities, mm-hmm. because we have a community of hackers that we work with. What are they talking about with one another? Who do they like to work with? And so it's making sure that when people are having dialogues, that they A, know what they should be saying about your company, right? Mm-hmm. So that your message is really concise and consumable, mm-hmm. And something that people want to adopt and communicate. Mm-hmm. That's important. But also, are they having a good experience? Because the people that are having a good experience, they'll talk about it. And the way that you're going to get to the point of even looking into an ad or, you know, optimizing SEO for a company is by having heard about it, most likely from someone who had a positive experience. So we mm-hmm. place a lot of bets in making a great experience for our hacker community and our actual customer community, mm-hmm. Really making sure they're enjoying themselves and we're listening to their requests, and we're making lots of opportunities for them to give feedback and taking it seriously and mm-hmm. creating a culture essentially out in the market that people can understand and want to be part of. So there's ways to measure it. And then there's sort of a finger in the air, knowing that it's ultimately going to make an impact. And if you're seeing Twitter posts of people that are delighted on a regular basis and you're combing Stack Overflow and the commentary unsolicited is positive, mm-hmm. your Gartner peer insights reviews are positive, and ultimately downstream the results are increasing, then you know your bets are paying off. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, we, again, would like to get to a point where it is more formulaic, and we're working on that. But that's been our approach so far, and it does seem to be getting us a good amount of traction.
Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think companies are going kind of this way, ungating content, providing value, telling a story, providing actionable insights on the problem, and kind of telling a unique story, and then kind of engaging your community, engaging existing clients to be your scouts, be your evangelists in the field. I think it makes a lot of sense. And letting go of control, knowing that it's never going to be perfect. I think any time there's multi-touch, it's how do you know if an email 2 years ago was more impactful than a light conversation, you know, 3 months ago? There was no way. And often even I think prospects don't even remember how they first came across the brand.
Well, our SDR team would tell you that is certainly true.
For sure. This was a very interesting conversation, Emily. I know we're coming up on time a little bit. So last few questions. If imagine you have a crystal ball and you can see into the future, in 6 months, 12 months, cybersecurity marketers will be concerned about, obsessed about what tools, what themes, what trends, what would be headline news?
Well, events are back. That's headline news number one. But webinars are also still here. So as we're planning for our next fiscal years, we're going to have to figure out how to support both strategies, where in previous years, you could really place your bets in one versus the other. So you need virtual experiences and you need in-person experiences. So I think we're going to see a lot of road shows, a lot of, you know, custom experiences, and a bigger bet on, you know, tier one events. The topics. I think people are going to be chatting AI for a long time. I think we're going to be figuring out how to use AI to optimize and scale. I think we're going to be figuring out how to incorporate AI in our roadmaps. You know, AI is here to stay for a little while. You ask me in 24 months if I think people will still be talking about AI, I'm not 100% sure. But in 12, I think it'll still be a pretty heavy talking point.
Certainly, certainly. Well, it's interesting because I think AI kind of touches a lot of different things. One, we're already seeing companies using AI for content marketing. Because it's, and with the, it just makes your content team so much more efficient. We're also seeing AI being integrated in the products. Mm-hmm. But also, I noticed that the phishing emails sent to me are have much better grammar no longer "dear sir" or "madam," you know, the weird punctuation. So it looks like it's being adopted by the bad guys as well. So it's kind of like a tug of war. This was amazing. Emily, thank you so much for taking your time. This was also fun. Where can people find you? What's the best way to connect?
You can always find me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active there. I'm always sharing cool stuff from Bug Crowd. So find me on LinkedIn. And that's the best place to get me.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.